Welcome to N is for Networking, the short, sharp podcast where we explain the jargon, acronyms, and concepts of the networking industry in plain language. I'm your co-host, Ethan Banks, a grumpy old network engineer who's been pushing packets around since the 90s. With me is co-host Holly Metlitsky, a university grad with a master's degree working in the networking industry, but pretty new to the scene. And in this episode of N is for Networking, we discuss the difference between a frame and a packet. So Holly, I want to throw this question to you first to see if you have an impression of this. If you, based on your training and experience, have an opinion here, how would you describe the difference between a frame and a packet?
You know, a key thing, if I have an opinion here, okay. It's an interesting question because, you know, we mostly deal with packets. So while I've definitely heard the words floating around, packets is our go-to. In my instinctive idea of it is really perhaps the difference between what OSI layer you're working in, so layer two or layer three. But outside of that, I'm excited to dive into this topic because it's definitely something I don't know enough about.
Well, you're exactly on the right track when you talk about OSI layers and layer two and layer three. So a frame would map to layer two and a packet to layer three. So with that as the next point to give us our clue as the difference between a frame and a packet, do you remember enough about the OSI layers to recall the distinction between L2 and L3?
Yeah. I mean, when it comes to L2 and L3, for me, it's really just L2 is usually when I'm doing switching. And L3 is really all IP stuff. So while I might not dive into the exact encapsulation and decapsulation of, I don't want to use the word packets now because that might not be the correct term.
Yeah.
But, you know, just not the ins and outs of them, but I know when I need to be in which layer.
Yeah. Okay. So the thing to keep in mind here, so let's just focus on a packet for a second. So a packet typically to us means an IP packet, IPv4, IPv6. It's potentially got a globally significant address. That is, you could have some unique IP or V4, V6 address that is unique around the world. And we have routing tables for the internet filled with how to get to different net blocks, different IPv4 and V6 blocks that might contain that address. But the key distinction here between layer two and layer three is while layer three has that packet with that globally significant address, it doesn't give us a means to actually move that packet across the wire. It's kind of like if you were shipping a package to someone and you've got contents to get to someone, what do? You're going to put it in a box, right? Well, the box would be the frame in this analogy. And there's nerds out there going, well, that metaphor breaks down, Banks. Yeah, it does. It does in places. But just roll with me for a minute here. If we want to get the packet across the wire doesn't know anything about IP. The wire knows Ethernet, or way back in the day, it would know maybe ATM, asynchronous transfer mode, or token ring, or FDDI, fiber data distributed interface. A lot of those are antiquated now. They're not things. They're not methods with which we send zeros and ones across a wire. The one we think about the most, especially as enterprise engineers, is Ethernet. That's the way we are encoding data to get it from point A to point B across a segment of wire. So what do you think? What do you think so far, Holly?
I think, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think maybe let's dive a little bit deep into what you mean by Ethernet.
Okay.
Because we're saying, okay, well, layer two, it's Ethernet, but maybe some folks out there aren't quite sure what that exactly means.
Right. So Ethernet would be the most common way that we move data around a local area network. That is, let's take your house. If your house is wired up with a cable and you've got a cable that's got an RJ45 connector on the end of it, let's say. It's got those eight pins, those eight wires inside. You plug it into the wall. You're probably talking Ethernet. There's a bunch of different ways historically that we could, that of standards that were defined to move the ones and zeros across that wire. Ethernet is the standard that we use most frequently. That is the one that by far and away, if we're talking about a piece of wire or a piece of fiber optic cabling, you're using some flavor of Ethernet to move these zeros and ones across the wire. So the standard says, hey, if you've got signal coming in, you need to represent it somehow. And we use some kind of binary encoding. It's zeros and ones that go across the wire. And if we were to use an oscilloscope or some sort of a tool to actually see what's happening on the wire, depending on what flavor of Ethernet it is, what kind of Ethernet it is, like gigabit Ethernet or fast Ethernet or 10 gig Ethernet and on, there's so many different speeds. There's different ways that the signal is encoded as zeros and ones. So we could think of Ethernet as a standard that gives us a way to encode data, including what's inside our packets, and move it from a sender to a receiver across the wire. That's the key. And I think the next thing with Ethernet and where it can get maybe even more interesting is that all the different speeds and all the different medium that we can use to do that encoding. So there's copper wire like we might have in our homes. Data centers, especially the faster they go, we exceed the physics of what copper cabling is capable of doing. And so we move to fiber optics. And so there's a lot of fiber optic requirements for very fast Ethernet. All right, let me stop there, Holly. What do you think so far?
So far, so good. I love the box analogy. I think that, well, perhaps maybe some people are going to have a little fit that it breaks down at some points. I think it's a good way of understanding. You know, you're trying to get something from A to B, and there's layers. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't just put my name on a box and expect it to get to me. So then.
Here's another way to think about this to keep those layers separated. While in our world of networking, we very frequently talk about Ethernet and IP as if those are the only ways for IP to encode a packet or for layer two to encode as an Ethernet frame. Well, an Ethernet frame can have all different kinds of packets inside. Back in the day, before TCP/IP won, before it became the standard way to address a packet, there were other layer three standards like AppleTalk and IPX and, oh boy, DECnet, I think, was another one. And there's some other ones along the way too. So I say that to make the point that Ethernet could have transported any of those things inside. If we think of Ethernet as the box, you could put an IP packet inside. You could have put an AppleTalk packet inside. You could put an IPX packet inside. Those all would have been valid. The key was just getting that packet and having some way to encode it across the wire so it could be transmitted from place to place. So going back to our difference then between a frame and a packet, as you said, a packet, when we are thinking about it from a layer perspective, we're talking about layer three. We're talking about what's happening at the routing layer. And layer two, right, switching, we're talking about an Ethernet switch that is actually looking at the frame, the box around the packet. An Ethernet switch, so we're going to spend another episode talking about a switch can be a router, but a router can't be a switch, I think was yes. How you asked it. And that's why I wanted to do this episode first, because this all gets into some of that. An Ethernet switch moves data around inside of it based on the MAC address of the Ethernet frame. That's the core decision-making process that's going on there. Doesn't care whether there's an IP packet inside of it or not. The Ethernet switch, it doesn't matter. It can have anything in it. Nowadays, the only thing you're almost ever going to see in it is an IP packet, but it could be that there's a lot of other payloads that are inside that Ethernet frame. Okay, so where are you at now, Holly?
So I'm thinking about something you said earlier, speaking of the globally significant versus like a locally significant address.
Yep.
Because now I'm thinking, okay, so we've got a frame. Let's chat about, you know, what is that locally significant address?
The locally significant address is going to be, in the Ethernet standard, a MAC address. It is going to be a 12-digit hexadecimal number. We typically see it represented, and there's a few different ways you'll see it represented, but that's the core of it. It's a 12-digit hexadecimal number that means something to the Ethernet it is a part of. That is, if we think of Ethernet as a network of Ethernet devices, It is its unique identifier on that local area network. I'm me. This is my 12-digit address. Holly's got her 12-digit hexadecimal address. We share the same Ethernet, and we can't have the same Ethernet address. That would be confusion. There'd be a duplicate address. That would be all kinds of problems. So every Ethernet address is unique. And interestingly, even though Ethernet is a locally significant address and not globally significant, in theory, everyone that manufactures an Ethernet address has manufactured a globally unique address. There should be, in theory, no duplicate Ethernet addresses the world over.
I guess that's what led me to my thought process, because I'm thinking, okay, I know a locally significant address is referring to a MAC address, but I also know the odds of me and you having the same MAC address should be zero. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, I'm like, but that's technically globally significant, but I guess in terms of networking, you're not using it to transverse the network globally. It's really located to your LAN.
Yeah, exactly. It's right. It's theoretically globally significant, but there's no such thing as a global Ethernet. Yeah. There's a whole bunch of different small Ethernets that are interconnected by the internet of a variety of transports, Ethernet being one, optical transports being another big one. That would interconnect all of the world's Ethernets together. But yeah, you can take your laptop and plug into any other Ethernet in the world and be safe. No, you're not going to find a duplicate there. And this is because Ethernet device manufacturers have been assigned blocks of MAC addresses. The first six digits of the MAC address are unique to a manufacturer. And there's some other, we can get into some special classes of MAC addresses and so on for things like multicast addresses and so on that are beyond the scope of our call of the day. But, you and I can pick up and move our devices anywhere. A manufacturer can sell a device to anywhere and not have to worry about a duplicate address. But again, since there's no such thing as a global address, a global Ethernet, I mean, there is no global Ethernet that we're going to be switching the world over. That's not a thing.
Yeah.
And I guess we could get into why that is at some point, but it has to do with scale. Ethernet mm-hmm. doesn't work like that. Although, interestingly, Holly, part of what you are a specialist with in your job is EVPN VXLAN. Now, that takes MAC addresses and moves them around over layer three. So we've kind of got some disruption of the layers here. So maybe that's a conversation for another day, I suppose.
Yeah, it's, you know, we start here and suddenly you start working backwards and it's, things get very complicated very quickly. So,
well, this is a good place for us to start our series is this conversation, because things like EVPN VXLAN make a lot more sense when you understand these differences and the differences between routing and switching on more detail than the problems that we're trying to solve. Ethernet is interesting in that it has grown far beyond in use what was ever conceived by its creators. It was conceived as a small, convenient way on a single wire to tap everybody in and be able to communicate and share data. And it's grown into this monster where you can have tens of thousands of devices more that are participating in the same Ethernet. And to make that work, switching became a thing. And then later, VXLAN became a thing so that we could move layer two frames across the top of a layer three infrastructure, where you're taking a layer two frame and wrapping a VXLAN wrapper around it. A tunnel. Yeah. And so I know that's yet another question that you've got is like tunnels versus tunnelless and talking about that. Well, all right, Holly, I think any final questions before we wrap it up for today?
I don't think so. I think this really covered the differences and, you know, it gives you a good understanding of also maybe touching the OSI layers and how that all comes into play. Because I think I actually had somebody ask me the other day, you know, talking about this podcast and what they wanted to hear. And like, can you just please tell me why we even need the OSI layers? And I thought, oh, well, that's definitely something to chat about if you're not sure where they play into. So this is just a key example of exactly where they fit in. So,
well, the funny thing about the OSI model in 2024 is it's antiquated. It really is. It works for certain things and begins to fall apart at other layers. So layer 1, 2, and 3 works pretty good. Layer 4, yeah. Start to get into 5, 6, and 7. Yeah, not so much. It doesn't make sense. And I'm actually not a huge fan of the OSI model in 2024, but because it is taught everywhere and it is the thing, the part of the vocabulary of a network engineer to say things like L2 and L3, we still got to work in that framework on some level, but there's better ways to think about it. So maybe that's another show, yet another show, Holly, as we talk about the OSI model layer and some other ways that we could layer the network stack and how to think about them. There are some other models there that are interesting. Oh, and then your question about MPLS, you know where MPLS fits in the OSI stack? It doesn't. No. It's kind of layer 2.5. It's kind of fits in between layer 2 and layer 3. So it's hard to win. All right, Holly, if people want to follow you on the internet, where do they do that?
LinkedIn. You can catch me under Holly Matlitsky. I'm there.
Excellent. I'm Ethan Banks. You can follow me on LinkedIn. Holly and I are also on the Packet Pushers Community Slack group. There's an NS for Networking channel in there. If you'd like to chat with us or make suggestions or give us some feedback on what you're hearing here today. And thanks for listening to this episode of NS for Networking. This is episode 1. If you have topics you want us to cover, you can go to packetpushers.net/followup. And send us your message. What would you like Holly and I to talk about next? And we'll add you to the list. And just remember that networking isn't hard. Other people figured it out, so you can too.